I guess the structural design is like rocking horse poo, you know. It's rare. We don't, there's not that many of us. And people, I guess education, most people who go, clients who go, hey, you need to work with Matt, think he's a structural designer. And I go, well, what does he do?
Package Design Unboxed, a new packaging design series where each week we'll discuss everything from concept development and design to material selection and recycling. Everything you need to know about package design. I'm Evelio Matos, and today we chatted up with Matt Bogost of Think Packaging, award-winning cardboard engineer that's made a name for himself with precision fits and killer unboxings. Become one of the most followed packaging designers in the world, known only as Think Packaging. Thanks for joining us, Matt, with Think Packaging out of New Zealand. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're known for and what you do at Think Packaging?
Yeah, man. Hey, how you doing? What are we known for? Basically, a structural design service, or self-confessed or self-labeled cardboard engineer. So, in a nutshell, we create the die lines of packs and spec materials and try to make the packers, I guess, as cool as possible with opening experiences and all that jazz. Trying not to create the same old shit, basically.
Yeah.
That's what we've basically become known for now. And trying to, I guess, like making packaging cool again, you know, that tactile thing's back. And yeah, we're kind of gripping onto that and trying to get things more sustainable. That's pretty much our main drive at the moment.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. So how'd you get into packaging?
I kind of fell slash got pushed into it. So when I was 17, I kind of dropped out of school. I was going to kind of stay on and do some kind of college or uni course, like in arts or something like that. I had no idea what I wanted to do, but it didn't work out very well, and I left mid the first year, I think. And I was just kind of bumming around at home, and my dad was looking through the papers to try to get me a job, and this ad was in there for a structural packaging designer slash sample maker. I always remember that title. And my dad was kind of like, what do you reckon of this? And I had no idea what it was. Like, I didn't even have an idea that anyone even designed packaging, or certainly boxes, right? Anyway, so I went for the interview, and turns out that it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. So the guide spoke me through, you know, he kind of showed what he did on the computer, this really archaic CAD system on running on like DOS or something. And he basically drew up a box, printed it, cut it out by hand, and then kind of it was like there. It was like instant gratification. And I was kind of hooked. Luckily, I got the job. And that was like, shit, 21 years ago.
Crazy.
And that's what I've done ever since. That's basically all I've ever been good at. You know, I've tried other things, and they kind of sucked.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
what about before that? Had you ever made anything? Were you like a crafty kid, fooling
Nah.
around in the garage or?
No, most people say that. The only thing I used to do is like build Lego. That's pretty much it. I'm still pretty shit at building anything out of wood because I don't really try, you know. My first thing would be like, hey, let's build a shed from cardboard. You know, that's kind of how I'd think. But no, my granddad was an engineer, and my dad was super crafty. He just, you know, like you'd wake up one day and he's like put a patio down in the backyard or built a shed, and I was like, shit, it's pretty cool. But never had real like an urge to do anything. And I guess packaging was my kind of engineering, you know. That's where I get cardboard engineer from.
Yeah.
That's basically what you're doing, you
Yeah,
know.
for
So
sure.
like I said, I kind of fell into it. I kind of fell into my dream job. I'm pretty bloody lucky.
And that place that you went and interviewed an intern, that was in London.
It was it, we I lived about an hour and a half from London on the train. So it was a company in Wellingborough, Northamptonshire. pretty small, shitty little town, actually. But we, the guy who ran it, he was from London. He'd been doing it for about 40 years. And we, it's basically in a, yeah, we're basically in a small town in this old hotel. I think it was a hotel back in the day. They used to say it was haunted, which used to freak me out at 17 when it was like dark and I was alone upstairs. It was like a creepy old English building, you know, everything creaked. Anyway, we basically were used for most of the big agencies in London, or a lot of big companies around the country, as their kind of incognito structural packaging designers. So that they'd say like, we are, you know, we've got this job for a client, and they'd basically use us under the covers. We'd basically smash out the work, and then they would take it as client facing, you know. Yeah. That's kind of how it was run. But it was cool because that meant that our client base was so wide. I got to work on pretty much everything, you know, every kind of packaging there was and every brand at a young age, which was pretty rad.
Yeah, and then after London and working with this company, what's the transition from there to New Zealand?
I left him because it was only myself and him, and I wanted to get to kind of go to a larger company. So I went to like I'd use inverted commas, like a proper packaging company, which meant they made their own board on site. They produced they packed their own stuff. And I was basically a display designer. And that lasted about 4 months. And I realized that actually it wasn't fun. I was getting told what to do and how to design things. Like, you know, we want this stand, but to fit this product now. And I just found that quite boring. So decided to save our money, and my now wife and I, Jane, just wanted to go traveling. So we ditched everything, bought a one-way ticket to Rio, Brazil, and somehow ended up living in New Zealand. just traveling around. And I think we came here to snowboard in Queenstown and just fell in love with the Kiwis and how New Zealand's run. And we're lucky enough to stay.
That's awesome. Rad. And then,
yeah.
So once you got there, it isn't as if, you know, the Kiwis were clamoring for cardboard engineering.
Oh, right? No. And I said to everyone was like, what do you do? And I said, oh, I designed packaging. And everyone just looks at you vacant, which still happens now. But I looked for work and I tried to get packaging work here. But I don't know. The packaging companies, a fairly cookie cutter type design, you know, it's quite standard. It's not kind of like Europe that I remembered. So it was wife again, who just kind of pushed me to do something about it and do it myself. Like, I never dreamt about setting up a business, but as soon as you realize that people aren't doing it, you know, something that I thought was just second nature that well, I was like, sod it, I'll give it a bash. And then Think Packaging was born, basically, about 10, 11 years ago.
So before that, when you're talking about them doing cookie cutter type packaging, I'm assuming it would be whatever the manufacturing plants in New Zealand were producing that they already had the dies for.
So pretty much.
Boxes. They're just wrapped with new art.
But basically, man, yeah. So like, if you wanted something that had to go through the mail, you're going to get, you know, like a pizza style box or a pack with the folding ears. It's going to be E-flute or B-flute. And you get it in this size because that's what you're told you need. There's no kind of perhaps design or consideration level of going like, you know, this, I guess, I mean, it's not bagging them. It's more, that's their capabilities. They're either really good in printing cartons or your corrugated supplier. And that's really cool. But if you wanted a mixture of both, you kind of had to go to two companies or they couldn't offer that. So being like a self entity, you know, just I can design whatever you want. Then we could just farm those bits out, outsource it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just boring. I hate boring. It does my head in. You know, you can be, you know, normal. It doesn't have to be a mad design, but boring, you know, you got to care. And that's what I felt was lacking, just a bit of care.
Yeah, but ever since you've been there and you've built out Think Packaging, you know, just looking down the list of awards that you've won and just some of the stuff that you've produced that's been featured.
Yeah.
It seems like you're working with a lot more New Zealand-based design agencies now. Like, there's a lot of really good design coming out of there.
Oh,
and you're a part of that.
Mate, absolutely. I think when one of my first jobs through Think was actually a US company. I was found, I think, through, I posted something on the die line maybe, and I started getting international work, and it was awesome. Like 50, 70, 80% of my work was all overseas, and people were trusting some dude sitting in Nelson, New Zealand, so I used to live on the South Island of New Zealand, to design packaging for them, and I kind of forged my way and just worked it out. And then as people understood what I did and more work got out, people realized that this packaging dude who's working worldwide is actually in a small little beach town in their country, you know, with a British accent. Well, a half a British accent. My mates in England would say it's gone now. Yeah, and now, I mean, dude, the design here, I think, rivals anywhere in the world, especially in packaging. I think New Zealand pushes so hard, and I think the level of the bar that's set here is, if it was out of 10, it would be 10 nudging 11. Like, there's some serious game here, I think, and it shows when you know look around the work that comes out. And luckily I get pulled in on these kind of jobs is that specialist part.
About that specialist part, is that part of why Think Packaging has grown so much, in terms of you don't offer visual design, you just focus on your niche?
Yeah, correct. Like I call it, I kind of stick to my knitting. Like there's no point. A lot of people say, you know, if you just employ a designer or a brand designer or yada yada, then Think could grow into this brand and packaging agency. But we wouldn't be that good at brand, you know. Like, I think we're really good at structural design. So if you just stick to that niche and what you're good at, then we get to work and collaborate with the best in the business with brand and, you know, creative direction and stuff. So why would I mess with that? It's definitely been a success for us because, you know, I think you'd know as well, but with like a structural brain and a creative brain from the graphic side, get those together and you can get a hybrid of what's feasible and what's not feasible. They could have a really big idea, and then it's my job to crush that a little bit, you know, but like, you can't make it as always. But at the same time, it pushes me creatively to go, well, how can we make it work? It's probably possible, you know? So that's where the best work comes out, kind of spits out at the end. So collaboration is a massive factor, I think, 100%.
What do clients need to know about you before they hire you on, right? Whether it's an agency or a product or a startup, what do they need to know about you?
I guess probably because the structural design, it's like rocking horse poo, you know, it's rare. There's not that many of us, and people, I guess education, most people who go, clients who go, hey, you need to work with Matt, Think, he's a structural designer, and I go, well, what does he do? And it's often just talking about process of saying we think about and sketch how this pack could look. We're going to ask all the right questions of how many you're making and what the purpose and target market's for. And then we're going to build you the actual design. And we're not doing the graphics. That is still with your graphics team. But we're going to make the way people get into your box, we're going to make it enjoyable, I guess. And that's, personally, I think it's quite an easy process working with me, or us, should I say, because I try to talk that through. And in fact, when we start a job, I'm really quite anal about sending pictures and videos at the cutting mat so people can generally see that we are actually working. And we don't just come up with this box and just kind of ta-da, you know. I like to show where it's, how it works. So yeah, I'd say just education of what the hell we actually offer. It's probably the biggest thing.
So talking about showing the client you at the mat, cutting things, assembling it, it sounds like you want to incorporate that client. You want to bring that client into the process.
Yeah.
What's the feedback on that? Like,
generally, in fact, that's 100% the most exciting part. Clients, they're getting a sense of craft and experience in that part, and being brought in the early stages, and me showing even packs that I've cut out and they didn't work, they appreciate that effort that's been put in. You know, I think everyone likes seeing something of theirs being made. You know, I think that's kind of it. I think it takes people back to being a kid, you know, or building Lego. Everyone's like, shit, it's cool. and everyone gets excited all of a sudden about designing a box that no one would ever think would be exciting. And that's the buzz I get out of it, of people getting excited, you know?
Once you've identified who the end user is and the direction the brand needs to go, how do you find inspiration? Where's the inspiration come from behind the pack?
It's a good question. And often I always think that I'm going to run out of ideas, you know? Like, all the time. I think inspiration just comes from, I do a lot of pinboarding, I must admit. So I'll search kind of similar products or packs, or as a packaging designer, I kind of know certain styles of boxes before we've even finished the brief that I start thinking would be good to get into the think tank, you know. That's not a pun, by the way. And I start just collating things together, imagery, thoughts in my head. I'll probably scribble a bit down on a bit of paper, like really kind of napkin sketch kind of crap boxes that only I could see, you know, like a doctor's handwriting, like scribbles. And then seeing all those in front of you, then I guess this kind of hybrid box and insert thing starts to happen. And that's where the ideas form. And I start to get maybe 2 to 5 kind of directions going at the same time. Unless it's a really specific job, then it's probably less concepts than that. But there's lots of inspiration everywhere. You can find it anywhere. As long as the pack works, you know, if you're going to put, if they said they want a tear strip in it, for example, it's got to be one that works. It doesn't tear halfway through and you end up ripping down the front of the pack. That's that frustrating part. And I guess once all that inspiration's down and you start doing a rough sketch, then I basically want to cut one out and I would test it and kind of get it on the cutting mat, because you can pitch as many cool ideas or do amazing visuals on the computer, but unless it's tested, I don't think it's, you know, you need to prove it, I think, before you get the client too excited. So I do a little bit of that as well, just so I don't flog a dead horse, because that's not a good way to be.
And are you taking that concept and going straight to CAD to build it out, or are you just hand-cutting a rough one to see if it works?
I always go into CAD just to kind of plan my lines. It's funny because a lot of clients or agencies will say to me, you know, don't spend too much time at the start, just give us rough models, but I cannot do it. Like, my brain won't allow me to make a really rough masking taped up box. I'm an anal freak that it's just as quick to kind of make a good model than a shitty one, you know. I can't strip it back that much. It frustrates me, to be fair, sometimes, because I often don't charge for some of that time, but it's just how I'm built. I'm like an OCD kind of guy. Things have to be straight and quite perfect.
Yeah, that's funny.
But I struggle with that. I struggle with that because I can feel myself spending too much time on certain things, but half of me hates it and half of me loves it. So, it just happens.
So, like, for example, the Chapter 2 bike frame, is that what it was called, the Chapter 2?
Yep.
So how did that shape of box, how did that form, that product capture, and all those fittings come about?
That's a good question, because that basically shows how I worked with obviously Chapter 2, but the agency On Fire on that job. And it was actually Sam at On Fire, who is the CD there, he basically said, you know, we don't really want a rectangular box with framing. Can we make it somewhat more exciting? And then that's the only thing he really said. And I was like, well, we could basically take all the edges off and just try to match the frame shape and see what happens. And then it just kind of made it more interesting as soon as we made it, and the way the bike was laid out, all of a sudden it's not a usual bike box, you know? And that's all it took. It's just saying, let's not put it in a fucking rectangle box that you slide out. It's as simple as that. Can we try something different? It's going to be made overseas, you know? That was it. And it kind of saved material as well. It was such a, you save that massive bottom corner where the wheel goes, you know, it's not there. So, I mean, once it's folded flat, you could argue it's probably the same amount of board, but it differentiates it from, I guess, if you've ordered a bike before, a bike frame.
So what about the product capture and how it held that product in there? Is that part of your early stage?
Yeah.
CAD work also?
Yeah, a lot of the way it sits in the box is generally governed by us. I'd perhaps lay it out, say, on my cutting mat and take some bird's eye view kind of shots on my iPhone and say, this is the layout I'm thinking. This is why. And then once everyone goes, yeah, that makes sense, I like that, then we start by building perhaps that insert first. It sits on like a little platform. So I'd start just so the frame doesn't rock. And we kind of build it inside out, I guess. Start from the guts, start photographing around it, and then everything starts to build on top. And obviously you have to test it.
That's my next question is how far do you take that down the testing process?
It depends job to job. Like some people, we have to go through a FedEx drop test sheet for some electrical stuff. The bike itself, I just shake stuff, mate. Like I do, I'll pick it up. And if I shake it and I feel nervous doing it, then I know it's not right. Deep down, you know, it's not going to survive or something's going to rip. And it's annoying at times. But in a nutshell, yeah, do you throw it or drop it? Or the ultimate test is just pack it up and send it to the client through a courier with no fragile sticker. And you treat it like a random parcel. And we, like I said earlier, we've still got a lot of clients overseas. So if you post it from NZ to somewhere around the world and it survives, it's a pretty good test. You know, we don't have to do loads and loads of drop tests because it's not super industrial stuff that we do.
Are you doing any ISTA type of testing?
ISTA? Is that an American term?
You got me. I don't know if that's...
Yeah, but it means the same thing. It's like, what does it stand for? I've just pulled you out.
You did. You pulled you out.
You have to edit this out, Avelio. I've just pulled your trousers down.
Yeah, you did. No, it's the Safe Transit Association. So in the U.S., we've got labs, right? We've got labs that will actually test it. And there's a battery of tests to go through. There's like 16 different drops on each corner and each edge.
Yeah.
From a specific height.
Yeah. That was that FedEx drop test that I said. It comes under, I guess it depends country to country what they're called. But I've only done that about twice. And it is brutal. And they drop it with weights as well. I did it for some tech gear. Had some like electromagnetic fucking thing in it. I still don't actually understand what the project was. I signed all these NDAs and I was like, I have no idea what it is. I still can't explain it. But that had to pass it. And it took about two rounds. We just had to build in a bit of extra cushion. And it's hard because most clients say, like, we don't want to use foam. So it makes the job way harder. because obviously foam is a really good impact device. And so is cardboard, but cardboard crushes rather than gives. So, yeah, it takes a little more. We're quite lucky that, as I say, we don't have to do loads of that. We're trusted that it's kind of tested enough. To be fair, if packages are getting treated like that, then your product's probably fucked anyway. You know, if it's getting dropped 16 times with weighted sides, then you're in trouble. You're going to have a bulletproof box, you know.
Yeah. No, and that's I mean, you find that a lot with the ISTA testing here in the US, where, you know, there's you know, hours of vibration where it's sitting on a vibration table with weights on it, just vibrating for hours, letting all the fibers in the board just separate, and then they go and drop it. You know,
It's a bit overkill. I don't know who decides to do that, but I don't like that person. You know, it just makes our job annoying. I'm not saying it's not valid. It's just, it's a bit of overkill in my opinion.
So you've packed everything up, man. You've packed everything from candles, shoes, honey, bikes.
Yeah.
You kind of do everything, right? But it's funny though, because like when you go through your Instagram or you go through your Behance page, everything's identifiably think packaging. You know, what do you think connects all of your work? Like what's that one thing about your work that holds it together?
Good question. I don't know. I used the word.
Have you noticed that?
No, I haven't. It's quite funny to hear someone say that. It was quite nice to hear. I guess you're asking, is there like a signature thing that we do?
Yeah, there's something in there. You know, I always think of it as, it's really, I don't know, your work seems always very playful.
Yeah, maybe I guess it's personality. I try to throw some personality into it. Like I'll say to clients, I'll challenge how cool we can go. Like for example, the other day we was doing a job for the AIDS Foundation, and it was quite an awkward topic with the agency. They're like, "Hey, we're going to put loads of condoms in here, and it's got a sexual masturbator, and it's going to gay influencers, and it's got a pack of punch. So we want this really cool box with layers and stuff." And I was kind of like, "Well, why don't we just make a massive box that looks like a dick?" And everyone just raised their eyebrows and went, that's it. Yeah, make a dick box. So that playfulness all of a sudden is actually, I haven't released that yet. Hopefully after this, I'll send you a picture. But it just makes the jobs fun. If you don't ask that question, then you don't get to make it. So, yeah, I guess you've got to, I'm not that straight laced, you know. I'm not kind of a boring dude to work with. I try to make it kind of fun. So maybe it's that dude. Maybe it's me asking him those kind of weird questions.
A lot of people wouldn't ask that question.
That's right. Yeah.
They would consider it, but they would never ask. They'd be like, "Oh, that they'll never say yes to that."
I think the way my business is set up and the work we churn out, that's what people want. In a way, people want us to ask that question, you know? I think if sometimes I'll do a design that I think under like client expected something a bit more fun, you know, I'll catch myself perhaps in a dip and be like, yeah, perhaps I didn't ask that awkward question. And then when you do, everyone laughs and gets uncomfortable, but something magic happens, you know.
When you first started, I think you were sharing an office with somebody that had a Kongsberg table and use it to cut out decorations. You like cut out trees and sheep and a bunch of
That's
stuff.
Right.
And today, your part of your business has kind of shifted from packaging to making those types of things, right? I think you did a pinata.
Yeah.
And now you're like making a horse, paper crafts.
Horse-sized pinata and a paper set for, like a local eBay called Trade Me Here.
Yeah.
And that's why I shifted. That's why I called myself a cardboard engineer rather than a packaging designer, because it's not just packaging that we do, you know? Although I'm not a paper artist, or I'm shit at origami, and I'm not a pop-up dude either, but it turns out I've never done it before, but I made like a paper flip-flop and some chips, you know, and a piece of fish. And I think to myself, how did I get here? you know? I have no idea how I transitioned from that. I think it's probably because I just said, yes, can you make this? And I was like, sure, and then panicked. But if you think about it, if you strip it down, a chip, you know, is, or a French fry type thing is, it's just like making a little rectangular box with an angled top. That's how I think about it. It's just a little box. Does that make sense? You know, I think your brain would get that. That's all it is. It's just a different shaped box, but nothing in it. I guess that's my thought process.
So, do you see yourself making more of that stuff?
I'd love to.
Is that becoming a bigger part of your business?
I'd love to. As soon as a brief like that comes in, I fucking love it. Because I don't do it that much, it's a challenge. I love doing stuff like that because you can literally spend a whole day cutting something out, and that's the best bit. I hate being at the computer. I do.
And there's no drop testing.
No drop testing. Just got to make it look cool. And that's the best brief. Just do something that looks cool, you know, and just get some colored stock, plan it, and then clients just trust just to do it. That's the biggest thing, just that trust. Just like, you know, the brief isn't always super, super intense. I don't get massive written briefs. Just have a chat, and it's pretty loose. And everyone just goes, like, make something cool. That's pretty much the end of it. So just try not to let them down. But yeah, if anyone wants some paper stuff doing, as long as it's not origami, then I'd give it a crack.
So you've gone from making boxes to making ray guns.
Yes. Yeah. Paper mustaches.
Paper mustaches. You know, I love that you've taken packaging away from just a secondary use in some cases, and you actually made it the product or the primary focus. But you've also gone as far as to launch your own product. So you've launched Rest in Pets a couple years ago. It was corrugated pet
boxes
caskets
for dead animals. Highlight of my career.
And then recently you did Skinny's VIP box, which was like a flat pack pop-up, and concert goers could stand up on it to get a better view of
that. That's right.
Music
that was to give them a VIP-ish treatment, like a cheap and kind of shit VIP experience. Pretty cool.
Is that a bigger part of Think Packaging now? As brands are looking for new ways to connect with consumers?
Absolutely, man. I mean, and it's the most fun work, you know, doing stuff for a promotion or a launch or for a brand ambassador / influencer, that is where, like, I'd love to spearhead the business as well. That is really where you can be creative and get noticed. And we've done some really fun stuff recently that I haven't launched yet. Things are taking longer to get through the system. You know, it's harder to launch things quickly now because the jobs are bigger, but man, it's fun. And I'm always sitting here thinking of what you could create out of cardboard and sell or make use of because it's cool. Cardboard's back, you know, big time. So yeah, I need to find that perfect way to kind of showcase that we're really fun on one side, but also really serious is the wrong word, but experience in creating great packaging as well. It's, I guess, getting that fine line of not just looking a bit like a clown that likes to make cool stuff.
But it's funny though, because like I know that we worked on a pack years ago, and the way that you showed me that the structure held up to just, you know, bearing any type of weight on it, you photographed one of your friends drinking a beer, standing on the box.
Right.
You had it like sitting in the middle of a crosswalk.
That's right.
Yeah, at a bar.
That's how we tested it. So I'd made it, and I was like, "Well, how do we test it?" And we were going for a beer. So I was like, "I'll take it to the pub." So that's what we did. So we took it in the street and stood on it, and then we stood on it in the pub. I think we even jumped up and down on it, and then with some leftover board, I think I made a little beer holder to stick in the side of the chair. I think that was my idea, just to add something to it. It was for uni students, right? That kind of idea. Yeah. So yeah, that's how that secondary idea comes, is just actually having a bloody play with it. You know, don't be such a stiff. it's okay to drink a beer and do work.
We're all adults, right?
In fact, if you're not doing it, you know, you're wrong. If you haven't got a hangover at work, then, you know,
something.
That's right. Yeah. I can sound like Frank Sinatra.
So you've also shared videos online where you're singing to your clients, right? Where you're walking them through the unboxing process. No, like really, like what gives you the confidence to be yourself?
I don't know how that started. Maybe it's just because it sounds really cheesy, but a lot of my really good clients are like really good friends and we've got a lot of respect for each other. And I don't see it as having to use the word again, stiff. I think it's fun. Just like, I must have just been in a really good mood and excited about the job. And by singing an intro to that video to the client, then they get sucked in on the enthusiasm, you know, and then all of a sudden they like it as much as me. And it's a win-win. So some clients send a video back singing and we have like a sing-off. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. So they'll receive my package and they'll do an unboxing video for me singing and pulling the pack out and stuff like that. It gets weird, dude. But I love it.
Having worked with a lot of packaging engineers and different agencies and stuff, a lot of times you'll see there's kind of this fixed process, right? Where there's like the sketch phase or the CAD phase, and the presentation they're giving you is basically the same presentation they give somebody else. They just change out the pictures, right? There's like this boilerplate PowerPoint. That's not the way that it has to be, right? I mean, you can sing to your clients. You have to have fun. And I think that's what a lot of people gravitate towards is the fact that
I think it's just showing that you really enjoy your work. And I think to any client or anyone paying for a service, even, you know, me, when I'm working with other people, if you show they're loving it and they're interacting, you know, with, you know, your products and loving it and making something rad for it, then what's not to like, you know? It's wicked. In fact, more people should sing, perhaps. I can't sing either. It's not like I'm good at it. I don't know. I do like lots of thumbs up and stuff. That's become a signature of Think. And everyone always comments, going, love the thumbs up at the end. Sometimes it's just a single thumb. Sometimes it's a double. Sometimes it's like the Hawaii like surfer dude or the Californian guy. And I give like some wiggles. Or it's like the rock symbols. And Blair, who works with me, he's looking at me. He's thinking like, what the fuck is Matt doing? That's the boss being a dick. Not on a video for a client. But it's become the most popular sign off. It's almost awkward to do it now. But it's like, it tells me how to edit my video, right? That's the end. So if you look through Instagram, there's a lot of thumbs up.
So you moved from London to New Zealand. You kicked off your own agency. And now, I mean, you've tons of followers. You know, your stuff is everywhere, all over Pinterest. People know you, or at least know your work. But really, you started from nothing to build this agency up. What's your advice to anybody that's considering packaging as a career? And then also to anybody that's considering just opening up their own agency but are afraid to do it?
Well, I was afraid to do it because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. You know, I didn't run a business. I'm still shocked and flattered when I'll be searching stuff and my boxes are there, and I'm thankful for that. Like, starting a business, you just do it. And obviously don't invest loads of money up front. I mean, packaging, all you need is a cutting mat, some board and a knife, and maybe some software. You know, you can still draw by hand if you had to. So it's not expensive to set up. You don't need a flash office or a flash postcode, you know, I don't think. Well, that's kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
You just kind of do it. And I think your work speaks for itself. The best advice I'd give is how I started was just, I used to make things all day. So I'd be like, what can I make for the house, or make up a pack, or go to the cupboard and pull out a jar of something, and I'd package it. I kind of pretend it was a job and start releasing it on Behance. And people started to see these white boxes, and I got followers. And I soon realized that people prefer seeing the craft process and the actual finished product, you know? That's what I've cleaned on to. So it's just doing good stuff. Just don't create shit things. And I think you'll do all right. If you want to do cookie cutter packaging, that's fine. But your market is limited. I try to angle business into the not really like the big spenders type thing, but the more high-end luxury, more bespoke items. I think that's where, you know, we're looking for startups and being a small business, that's what they want. That's how we've kind of gained traction, I think. I don't know if there's any pure advice. I think just do it without sounding like a Nike ad. That's all I did. In fact, like, I used to spend hours posting stuff on social, which, and I'm not a big social media dude, you know, like, I don't kind of like take pictures of my lunch and post it and look for likes. But work wise, from day one, you know, 10, 11 years ago, my wife would come back from work and be like, "What have you done all day?" And I'd be like, "Oh, I've uploaded pictures to Facebook and Behance." And she's like, "That's not fucking work, dude. Go and get some paid work." But turns out that all of my leads come from those posts and still do, you know? So it's...
See? So you're
right. Totally right. She knows it. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah, it was about that kind of getting your workout and personality out there. Don't be afraid to show it, because if people don't like it, then who cares?
So Matt, where can people find out more about you, and what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Call me. Probably there's info on my website, thinkpack.co.nz, or Instagram's good. I think, what's my Instagram handle? Think_packaging. You've pulled me up on this before. I'm not very good at hard selling myself. I'd just be like, I don't know, just Google packaging, and if I'm there, reach out. You know, I've always been like that.
So if you want to get a hold of Matt, I'll have all this information in the show notes.
I open Google.
You know, you can hunt them down.
Google Safari, tap in Think Packaging New Zealand, and then there'll be a picture of my face or something weird. And if you email me with the title of the podcast, or send me a DM on my Instagram, I'll send you a singing video. How's that?
There you go, man. Ooh. You're in the yellow pages, right.
Yeah.
The boxes.
Yeah. I get it. Classic.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks, Matt. I appreciate you joining us. And,
always a pleasure, mate.
Sharing a little bit.
Always
about
a pleasure. Your stuff. Hopefully, I didn't just rant too much. We'll find out.
No. Yeah, we'll find out. The two people that'll listen to this will be
my mum and your mum.
Yeah, exactly.
That always a pleasure. E, always a pleasure, mate. Love it. Cool.
That was Matt Bogost, building a structural packaging empire, with me, your host, Abelio Matos. If you enjoyed what you heard today, subscribe, rate, and share your thoughts on Package Design Unboxed. Thank you once again to Matt Bogost for being on, and thanks to you for listening. Talk soon.